Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio. Across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Bill.
George, we're both a little bit under the weather, aren't we?
I'm doing pretty well. You don't look good today.
Well, that's not where I was going with that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going with I don't maybe sound my normal self.
I think you sound real professional.
Well, when you get a little bit of a cold, you get a little bit more of the deep voice. I've got a little bit more of the Tony Bennett thing going today.
You do?
Yeah.
You know what I'm noticing? How much lighter it is late at night now. That's really been a switch.
You've got like one observation. And it's the same one every week.
And they're a compelling one, too.
And they're compelling. Yeah. And every week it gets a little bit lighter, a little bit longer, doesn't it?
A little bit lighter, a little bit lighter.
You just amaze me sometimes.
Thank you.
Absolutely interesting and relevant you are. So thank you for your contribution.
I get that.
George, tonight, no exception, another award-winning episode is underway. We are going to bring on our guests in just a little bit. They've written a book called Pure Eyes, Clean Heart, A Couple's Journey. And it's about the struggle with pornography and the way that impacts a person and a marriage.
It's a very relevant topic. And I've always said the only men that have trouble with pornography are men that have seen it. And I believe that it's just too much for us. And so we need to go to Jesus and say, hey, I've got a problem with this. And maybe you don't even want to change it. Maybe you don't think it's a problem. And we might have to pray for the desire to change that, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that always brings us to step one, where we admit we are powerless over drugs, alcohol, pornography, anything. And our life is unmanageable. But we have a God that is sovereign. He's in control.
George, you know, I think this book, one of the things I think that sets it apart is the vulnerability and transparency of the authors as they talk about their story. They're sharing secrets, and I swear nobody likes to uncover their secrets. Nobody likes to have themselves exposed. And I think the fundamental problem with any kind of deception is if I lie to you and say something like, boy, that's $70 haircut was really worth it. In a way, I'm causing an erosion in our friendship because I'm just not being truthful.
I get that.
Yeah. If I keep continuing down that path, we have less and less of a relationship, and I'm doing more to erode
it. I don't know how that could be possible, but keep going.
Well, I'm using us as a bad example, but you know what I'm trying to say is you start to then, keep someone in a state of not knowing you, and then you're not trustworthy to yourself because you know you're being deceptive. And then if you can't trust yourself, how do you start trusting anybody else? And all of a sudden, you end up living in a world where you don't trust anybody. And then you talk about you need to put your faith and trust in God, and you go, that's too much of a stretch. I think it's a big problem.
Well, just because I'm dishonest doesn't mean God is. And we need to not have a God that is so small. I'm always, really grateful that people will talk about an issue like pornography. I struggled with pornography for a while. I would never share that on the radio, and I'm glad people do. And you're right, Bill. When we look at ourselves, God already knows our secrets, and he still loves us. But he's got a plan to change this, and we try things. Like I'll limit that. I'll put blocks on my computer, whatever. I think the key for stopping drinking, stopping drugging, stopping pornography, your sex life, is admitting you are powerless, getting on your knees and saying, hey, help me with this. I can't do it. And a lot of times I don't even want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend who has referred to his laptop as a naked lady machine.
Okay.
So, it is what it is. And there is, in Hollywood, I think 504 movies were made that netted a total of $8 billion in revenue. And in the adult film industry, last year there were 13,000 movies made for $13 billion.
Wow.
That's a big business.
Yes.
And it infiltrates Christian homes, evangelical homes. 50% of Christian men can be considered addicted to pornography. That's a big number.
Well,
let me translate that for you, George. That's 1 in 2.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. You saved me a lot of work there. I think the thing here is the technology's helped a lot of things, but it's also helped make sinning easier.
Yeah. I mean, we create technology, then it turns around and recreates us.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it's available everywhere, and that's not good for men.
So we kind of set that up, that we are powerless, we're admitting it, and we need to go to Christ for our redemption and our sanctification. So let's get started with that.
Okay. George, do you have a step you want to talk about tonight, or did you already do that when I wasn't paying attention?
Well, I was talking
that's
about
so like
step
me.
One.
Okay.
Where we admit we're powerless, which you're not, so it doesn't apply, but you know, that's...
I was working on my Sudoku puzzle when you were talking about that. So can you review that?
I will, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
I think if I could change one thing, and I would never change a step, I think not just admitting but accepting. I can say all day long I have a problem, but accepting is, are you willing to do something about it? You can change your life anytime you want. Let's do it now.
Okay. George, who can reprogram your self-image?
God.
Okay. And we're
5 seconds, George.
I mean, we're stuck with the idea that there is something wrong with us, correct? There is something wrong with us.
That was never a struggle for me.
I get
How
that.
About you?
No, I get that. There okay. never a struggle for me.
Okay.
So obviously,
I see that, yeah.
I don't think you had to go there, honestly. That was a cheap shot.
I was talking about myself there. I'd never say anything
nice save.
That mean.
Nice save. But anyway, so we want to talk about... tonight's topic, and we want to bring in our experts and authors and the people who are struggling through this and through this journey, they're sharing their hope with others. And they've written a book called Pure Eyes, Clean Heart, Craig and Jen Ferguson. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
See, George, isn't it a sigh of relief that they're still there?
Yes. Yeah, it's a miracle. That's the first miracle. Yeah. So. Craig Ferguson, gosh, I bet he doesn't get that at all.
No, he never does. But we always pray that when we go to the guests, they're still there. So thank
you. Your prayers have been answered.
Thank you for staying with us tonight. All right, let's jump in. Where would you like to start? I always like to give the guest the chance of saying, where do you want to begin?
Well, I mean, since you're talking about the first step of admitting that you have a problem, we can start with that one if you want. It is kind of midway into the journey for us. So I'll start with there with that. So we had been through a couple of cycles with me engaging in pornography, Jennifer catching me in this, confronting me about it, me apologizing to her, promising I'd never do it again, and things would be okay for a little while, and then me slipping back into it, her catching me, you know, the cycle, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, the first major incident happened with us a few years after we had been married and our children were born. And then there were two more incidents that were pretty bad. And each one, I found myself sinking further and further into a depression. And my relationship with God and Jesus at that point was, I use the term academic. It really, I knew the Bible. I'd studied the Bible, had a fascination with the history and the culture and just trying to figure out, you know, who God was and what he meant for me. But I didn't really have an intimate relationship with him at that time, even growing up in the church. And so, I sunk into this depression where I basically was, I had told Jennifer at that point that she would probably be better off if I wasn't around. And I didn't mean us being divorced. I meant like me being gone from the earth, which was a big deal. And that obviously scared her. And, but that was rock bottom for me. And I realized at that point that even though I've been struggling with this problem since my preteen ages, I'd always deluded myself into thinking I could stop at any time. When I was single, you know, I knew it was wrong. I knew using pornography was wrong and I shouldn't be doing it because, you know, I considered myself a Christian and it obviously was boring. I kind of viewed it even at that point as, even though I wasn't actually having sex with these women, I was fantasizing about having sex with these women. So, and Jesus had always said, even if you, you know, commit adultery with a woman in your heart, you still committed adultery. So I was considering it fornication, but it was, you know, sin was sin. And I deluded myself into thinking that, you know, when I got married, I wouldn't need it anymore. I mean, I'd have a wife and I could have sex anytime I wanted, which is not true, by the way. Spoiler alert for any of those who are not married yet. But, you know, even after we got married, it still was prevalent in my life. And so that last time where I was basically just didn't have anywhere else to turn, I finally began to realize that I couldn't do this by myself. And I, at that point, we'd even tried therapy, which didn't work for me. But I came to that point where you guys were talking about where I realized that I was powerless to stop within myself. And so that was when my journey to recovery actually began, because I reached out to God and said, I need you. I need you in a way that I've never needed you before. And I began to reach out to Jen in a way that I'd never done before.
So he's
Jen, you want to add anything there?
Yeah. So you admitted there and you've accepted this now that I've really got a problem and I need to, you know, get as much help as I can because this isn't changing. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
All right. So, Jen, are you going to jump in quite yet?
Sure. You know, from my standpoint, when we met, I was 19 years old, and I had not I had no clue the depth of darkness of the porn world, and I didn't even know that you could be addicted to something like pornography. And so by the time we got married and I realized that Craig wasn't the best communicator, when we got married and got back from our honeymoon, we found out that Craig had this kidney disease. We got a letter from the life insurance company saying he had been denied. And so at that point, we had our first major crisis, and I felt like it was kind of day one of being married, right, in the real world after the honeymoon. And he took that information and just went internal with it. And it was really difficult for him to talk about it, to express any fears or concerns. And basically, instead of turning to me, he turned to porn. And God is so gracious, I think, in that we had a crisis like that happen because years later, as I'm still processing this addiction and this cycle that Craig was in, I realized that porn is not about sex. It's about a fantasy. And so it kind of took some pressure off me because I could see this wasn't about what I looked like or how often we had sex or how good I was in bed or any of that. It was Craig did not know how to have an intimate relationship and really trust somebody to be there for him. And so instead he turned to porn. And I think he's always been very independent. And that was a quote unquote safe little world where he could enter in, be who he wanted to be, release all of his problems and get a quick fix, right? A quick escape from the real world. And so when I first found out that this was a cycle of addiction, I thought that I would just jump in and save the day. And I was very controlling because I was scared. The porn addiction seemed so big to me, something that needed to be quickly fixed or it was going to blow out of proportion. And so we made up all these rules. Okay, you know, you have to turn the computer this way so that when I walk in the room, I can see what's on your window. You're not allowed to clear your history. You can't be in the study with the door closed. You know, all of these things, like I just tried to put them in a box so that he couldn't hurt himself. And what we learned is that God did not create a spouse to be a parent of that spouse. And instead of having two kids, I now have three. And I was running myself ragged, trying to keep him safe, all the while he's trying to thwart my endeavors on some level because he wasn't ready to leave that fantasy world. He wasn't ready to give up his security blanket. And so for a decade, we pretty much went back and forth with this. And it wasn't until he realized that he had the choice to either be in this world or not in it. And if he wanted to find true joy and true satisfaction and true intimacy in a relationship, he was going to have to feel a little naked, for lack of a better term, without this security blanket that he'd been lugging around since he was 12. And that's a big step. And so through that, you know, we were rebuilding trust and all of that, but it was so good to just see God working. There's not ever going to be a quick fix, but I felt like every time we got to possible despair or whatever, God would just give us hope, keep going, keep pushing on. And we learned a lot about forgiveness on a level I think we never would have experienced had we not gone through something that can be so detrimental to a marriage.
Wow.
That's a lot of candor, which I love.
It's great, and it's a lot to chew on, Bill. There's a lot of stuff here. I think for guys growing up, a lot of us, sex is recreational, not relational. And so we need to redo that, and that's a tall order, isn't it?
Right, exactly. When I think, too, like, you know, sex was created as an expression of love and for procreation, and then those children are born from an act of love, and we have disassociated that love with the sex. Does that mean so it has totally destroyed what God had originally intended? And so naturally that's going to have incredible consequences for our marriages.
All right, George, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we've got lots more with the Fergusons. Stay with us tonight on Real Recovery. Glad you joined us. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back, George. This is an interesting conversation we're having tonight with Craig and Jen Peterson. They've written a book called Pure Eyes, Clean Heart. And this is a journey, and they're halfway through it, about their struggle with pornography and how it's affected their lives and their marriage. And they're being incredibly candid and honest, which is perfect for our show.
It is. And it's interesting, and it's very scary.
Oh, it's very scary. Yeah, it's... when I was listening to Jen, before the break, we were talking about how when Craig would isolate, it seems like the default thing to do would go for escape and fantasy. And I think that is what most guys are going to have in their head is, I need some kind of escape. Maybe it's going and, you know, running around a track or doing something, but you need some kind of escape, some kind of release. And the path of least resistance might just be going in the other room with your computer.
Sure. And then you bring the reality in, as she was talking at the end, about kids and stuff, and all of a sudden the fantasy isn't that great anymore. There's responsibility, and we are responsible to God, to our mate, and then to our kids. And here's a guy that sounds like a good guy, and all of a sudden he's got kids, he has a wife, and he's struggling with this. And I know in my addiction, there comes a moment when the shame, the guilt, it's overwhelming. And it hits you one day, and it sounds like that's what happened. So he's reaching out, and he's being vulnerable to God and to his wife. And I need help. I'm interested what happened next. What happened next? I'm good at this, aren't I? Yeah.
We're a couple of seasoned pros here behind the mics. A
couple of pros right here.
Yeah.
A lot of long, awkward stares at each other. Like, okay, who's going to talk? How about you? No, me? Okay, you. Okay.
Craig, you want to take that?
Yeah. So at that point, like I said, that was the beginning of the recovery. And then what was important for me to understand at that point was that Jennifer was not the enemy. And what was really hard for me to overcome was the fact that you mentioned the guilt and the shame associated with, you know, the pornography use. And I knew that it was hurtful to Jen, because not only had she communicated that to me verbally, she was communicating that to me with her actions as well. And so, you know, it wasn't until, you know, even a few years after this point that I would say that I was well on my way to recovery. and there would be more instances of slipping and falling. But I was seeing this as we progressed this journey together. I was seeing changes in Jennifer, in that she wasn't reacting out of anger, and she wasn't reacting out of there was some frustration there, but I saw love, and I saw compassion, and I saw a woman who was fighting for me, not with me. And that was a tremendous shift in our relationship. And it wasn't that I was necessarily looking for it, but I really feel like God was opening my eyes to saying, I have created for you a spouse, a partner, someone who is going to help you through this, and you need to engage her in the process.
And
so,
I had to come – can I jump in here real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had to come to a place where I was willing to lay down the rules, because I at one point we had set up all of these rules. Craig had been through counseling, and I had gone away to go get my haircut, and I came back and opened the door, and the kids, you know, were off doing something by themselves, and I caught Craig looking at porn again. And at that, and that was after all of these things had failed. And so I ran to the bathroom, and I just basically had it out with God and said, what? None of these things that I am doing is working. And how dare you put me in a situation with this? This is not what I signed up for. You know, just total despair and hopelessness. And I heard him in my head just say, are you ready to do this my way? And I was like, oh, okay, well, there's really, I have no other choice left. So sure. Let's see if you can do this. And so there was this moment of surrender where I had to lay down the constant checking up. I had to lay down enforcing the rules. I had to lay down any semblance of control that I felt like I had in this relationship. And so in doing that, I was giving all of that to God and trusting him. Okay, Lord, teach me what it looks like to be a wife who is helping her husband through porn addiction. What does that look like? And he was so faithful, because I pretty much tried. I would have suspicions, or I would just react out of fear and you know, give him 20 questions and the rundown and everything before. And then afterwards, I would say, okay, Lord, if I need to be involved, if you need me, then you'll let me know. And there were several times when God woke me up from a dead sleep and said, to get me up so that I could stop Craig. There was one time I remember he was trying to leave the bedroom, and I woke up and I was like, where are you going? And he said, and this is like at 1:30 in the morning, I have some work to do. And I was like, I really don't think that you have work to do at 1:30 in the morning. Why don't you just come back here and cuddle with me? And so he did. He got back in bed. And then the next day I said, hey, so were you really trying to do some work? And he said, no, I was going to go look at porn. You know, but the good thing was is that I didn't stay up all night wondering. I was asleep. God used me, and then we all went back to sleep. You know what I'm saying? So like God just showed me that he can be in charge, and he will let me know when I'm needed, and it's not my responsibility to be on top of Craig all the time.
I'm just trying to get a read as to where your rage is, where your hysteria is, where your you know, resentments are, because it seems that that's usually what happens in these situations, and you seem fairly focused.
Well, I think I didn't. I had to put the anger. I gave God my anger, because anger is like a big boulder that we're not really designed to carry, and so it was exhausting to carry around that anger. And for me, God showed me, hey, you know, pornography is a sin just like any other sin. And I had struggled with food addiction. I ate for comfort. I ate to escape. And so I went on this journey with God to get healthy, and he showed me that I was eating. I was making all these bad choices because I was trying to fill a void that only Jesus was supposed to fill with food. And so if I can do that with food, how can I judge Craig for doing that with porn? It's the same thing.
Well, you have an excellent point.
I mean, you can still do it, but you can't justify it. I mean, and I think that is good. That goes back to step one for you. You realize your brokenness. And I think when we do that, Bill, then we're relying on God that I can't judge somebody. I can help them. It's real hard for me to be helpful and loving when I'm judging. But when you're in the middle of it, I could see I should be angry. but in your anger, do not sin. And so that's a great point.
Well, I'm impressed that Jen took her anger right to God.
I have to clarify. I did not. That was not day one.
I'm sure that wasn't day one. I'm sure Craig got his share.
I did.
But I'm saying it sounds to me that it shifted within a reasonable amount of time when you realized it's not going to serve you or your marriage if you hound him with your anger.
Right. True.
So that's the part that I find really impressive.
It is.
Because that could be setting up a lifetime of resentment and anger and mistrust. Yeah. And you chose not to go down that road.
Right.
See, that's what's super impressive. Craig, you're a lucky guy.
And more ways than one, brother.
Way to jump in on that, Craig. That was good.
Yeah.
And it is. One of the things that I was listening to, Bill, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I would be real angry. I've had the same problem, and I think guys struggle with that their whole life. And there's tolerance here, but there's also accountability. But I can't force you to change. And I guess the big thing I'm hearing here, Bill, is I'm staying in this relationship. That, to me, would have been very comforting.
To have the assurance.
The assurance there, yeah. And that had to be tough for you, too, wasn't it? Both of you, I would think.
Well, you know, my parents got divorced right after Craig and I were married, and I was pretty committed to, number one, I'm a pretty competitive person, and so I wasn't going to concede defeat. But I had to figure out, like Craig said, I had to figure out who I was fighting with to keep him. I wasn't fighting with him to keep him. I was fighting, and I wasn't even fighting against the porn stars. In Ephesians, it says our battle is not with the flesh and blood, but against the evil principalities of darkness. And so that was so good for me to shift, to know who my enemy was, because that entered in the power of prayer. For so long, I had been praying, you know, God, just fix him, just heal him, just, you know, whatever, instead of actively engaging against the spiritual warfare and praying for God to change both of us. You know, I had to pray that I would really be able to release my anger and see him as God created him to be and not as the porn addict, right? And then, two, I needed to pray for a deepening of his relationship with Jesus, praying against temptation and all of that. Like, so I had a role. I just didn't know how to clearly define that role until I was able to surrender. And so but I think prayer is tantamount, because when we're praying, we're deepening our own relationship with Jesus. And Jesus did not want divorce to be the ruler of this relationship. And that was very clear from the beginning as I was listening to him, or once I started listening to him.
I love that, Bill, the powers and principalities. That gets me directly to step one, that I am powerless. This is a lot bigger than I am.
Way bigger.
And I need a big event, God, to have a big event recovery. How did that, you know, walk out for you? Is there Bible studies? Is there prayer groups? Were there support groups? Was there counseling? How did you guys do that?
Yeah, I mean, initially, I did attempt counseling, and this is not a statement necessarily against counseling. I just, honestly, at that time in my life, even though I knew it was a problem, I wasn't really ready to share that openly with a complete stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't participate as well as I should have in that therapy process. So it didn't work for me. A lot of what we have been through has been from us communicating with each other, lots of prayer. There weren't really a whole lot of resources out there. And, you know, even when we got into the process of writing this book, and Jen was doing, you know, a tremendous amount of research on the resources that were out there, there wasn't much at all. And, I mean, there's a lot of statistics and there's a lot of, you know, of data, but there was no, other than, you know, the Bible and God, there wasn't really much we could go to. And I read some books and I'm not sure how you guys feel about, you know, venturing other people's stuff on the air, but is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, so the Triple X Church has some resources out there. There was a video series, and they put out a book as well. It's I forget the author's name, but it was beneficial. And there was another series, Every Man's Battle, that was fairly good. But ultimately, for me, those resources they weren't the cure, right? All they really did for me was kind of reinstill in me that what I was doing was wrong. They gave some tips, but ultimately the answer for me was a relationship, a true intimate relationship with Jesus and God that would then allow me to have a true and real intimate relationship with my spouse. And that's the real answer. And all these other things that were out there were just pointing me towards that final solution. And it wasn't until I could realize that was what I needed to do and work towards that, that I was able to actually fully embrace my recovery.
Mm. So you had a lot of head knowledge about God, but somehow it wasn't kind of gushing out of your heart, and you didn't have that sense of who he was to you in your life. So God's substitutes came easily. Does that sound right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, George, this is going to be a fascinating second half. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to have more. So please stay put. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for staying with us tonight. Glad you joined us. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex on the board. You're listening to Real Recovery. Tonight we're talking to Jen Ferguson and Craig Ferguson. They have gone on, and they're in the middle of quite a journey to freedom from pornography. They've written a book called Pure Eyes, Clean Heart. And these resources are incredibly valuable, George, today with the amount of people that are suffering, some many quietly. Because if you have conversations with men, it's the last thing they're going to admit to. Is that they're struggling with this, and it's a much bigger problem than any of us can imagine. There's so many pastors today that struggle with pornography, and when that's reached the pulpit, there's even more trouble.
Well, that would be true, and it's sad. I don't know anybody in recovery that's a guy that doesn't struggle with it, and I know very few Christian brothers that don't struggle with it. Now, maybe friends of mine are kind of, you know, those kind of guys. But I don't think so. I think it's prevalent. We don't talk about it because it's not okay. And what my Bible tells me is that apart from God, you're able to do everything, that you're not that great, that the heart is desperately wicked above all. Who can know it?
I mean, apart from him, you can do nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, you said everything.
Did I?
Yeah.
That just goes to show you how dumb I am, Bill.
Well,
thanks for pointing that. Yeah.
You're not the brightest bulb in the room. But this is embarrassing for me because I had to correct you.
Yeah.
And then it made me realize I have to listen to you. And that was the most stressful part of all.
Yeah, but the good thing is you get to look at me, which I can't say back to you. So here we go.
No, I'm getting a mesh screen put up between the
powers
studio
and principalities that she talked about out of Ephesians. We need to put on the full armor of God here. And we started talking about step one. We admit we're powerless, that we don't even want to change this some days. And my guess is for Craig, there were times when he didn't look at it, and then he thought, you know, I haven't looked at this for about a month. I owe myself the fact that I can look at this or something like that to relapse. How do you prevent relapse now? Do you have a relapse prevention plan?
Yeah, and for me, I didn't look at it as a sense of, you know, I get to do this now. For me, it was more subtle. It was a false sense of security that I had finally, you know, beat it, right? Or I had, you know, won the final battle, and I was no longer addicted to it.
Okay.
And that was more of a delusion on my part. And so for me, part of this journey was, and you talked earlier about the guilt and the shame associated with the addiction to pornography, and that's really what gives it its power. And for me, I had to come to grips with the fact that I had to tell the people about this, that what was going on with me. And so I told my friends, and, you know, we told my parents. And as I broadened the circle of folks that knew I was struggling with this, I began to get support from these folks. And I would have friends that would tell me, hey, have you seen this movie? And then they would follow up with saying, you know what, you probably shouldn't see this movie because it's got some pretty graphic scenes of sex and stuff in there. So they knew that there would be things that would not, that were not good for me for my recovery, and they would tell me about it beforehand. And I wouldn't have had that had I not explained to them what was going on. And in addition to that, you know, I do some traveling away from the family because of work and things like that. And so I have a group of guys that know that I struggle with this, and I can call them and say, hey, I'm getting ready to go on a business trip, or I'm going to be out of town away from Jen and the girls. Could you pray for me against temptation? And I know that even in the moment while I'm on those trips and I'm feeling that and I need the support, I could call them and they could walk me through it. And that is a tremendous resource. And I would strongly encourage anybody who's struggling with it, that you need that resource. And, you know, the book itself was intended to start that conversation. It's to show people that it's okay, that we need to talk about this problem of pornography addiction, and that by doing so, it, that's part of the solution, is getting people talking about it, getting people comfortable with the idea of talking about it. And the more that we're talking about it, the stronger we're going to be resisting the temptation. And that's really the battle there right now, is just getting people talking about it.
Mm-hmm. It's like in the summertime, maybe if there's like a wet basement or something, and you've got cushions in the basement, and the first thing you do is you take the cushions out and you lay them out in the sun. Because once you get something put out in the light, things change. And it sounds mm-hmm. like the more you talk about this, the more it gets out into the light, and it starts to dismantle some of its power because it's not so ultra secretive anymore.
Absolutely.
So what did you, Craig, what did you experience? And Jen, I want to ask you the same question. Once you start going out there and saying, hey, I've written a book about this, I don't know if you knew, but I struggle with this, what kind of response do you get? I mean, is there people coming going, oh, you know, me too. What can you do to help me? What should I do? Are you getting a lot of that response?
Yeah, I mean, when we first sat down and we're talking about this, and I don't want to minimize the anxiety or the stress that I felt about making this, you know, extremely public, but, you know, I had to risk that, right? I had, on the one side, being obedient to what God was calling us to do versus my own ego and quote-unquote reputation or whatever. So I had to lay all that down, and I did that very early on in the process, and it was a process to do that. But since then, you know, I was kind of expecting, you know, some people to kind of respond, I was expecting some negative reaction. But honestly, I can tell you it's been quite the opposite. I've had people come up to me that I know more of an acquaintance, not necessarily I would consider a friendship or relationship with, that told me, hey, I've heard about your book. And first of all, I want to say thank you for writing that book. Thank you for taking the time to tell people about this. I struggle with this too. And I need to read this book. And so to me, the message has been overwhelmingly that there's this hunger for people that people have out there that need help with this. And it's almost like any movement where the initial people who'd stand up, they're very few and far between, but that strengthens and that encourages others to stand up and join that movement. And I kind of feel like that's kind of where we are. I mean, there's other people out there that are speaking out against this, but the more of us that are talking about it and doing this, others are going to join in and say, yes, you're right. Let's do something about this, you know? And that's my hope and that's my prayer, that people will feel encouraged by reading this and hearing our story, that first of all, there is hope. Mm-hmm. That hope is in God through relationship with Jesus. But when you have that, then no matter what struggles you have, He's going to walk you through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break in just a second here, but before we go, Jen, I want to ask you, when were you in your head saying to yourself, I am willing to forgive him? How long did it take before you had that thought?
It took several years, I think, to get to that deep level of forgiveness because, I would see how broken up he was about it every time he got caught. And so I would, there would be a measure of compassion that just, broke out of me and I wanted to forgive him. And so I could say the words, I forgive you, because number one, like, I know the Bible, and the Bible says, forgive so that you can be forgiven too, right? And I didn't, but I think that the more I studied God's word, the more I knew how much I was a sinner, and God showed me that my sin was just as bad as Craig's sin, and it's the world that gives this whole hierarchy, right, of which sin is worse than the other. And so when I realized my own brokenness, as you said, and my own places where I fall, it was much easier to forgive him and say, you know what, I mess up daily too. Mm. And I would really hate it if Craig just decided one day that I had run out of grace, that I had messed up for the last time. And that just makes me feel physically ill right now. Like, I don't ever want to run out of grace. And so if I know that I need an unlimited amount, then I need to be able to extend an unlimited amount.
Yeah, that's very
like that.
Like that too. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have one more segment with Craig and Jen Ferguson. Thanks for being with us tonight. Hope you're enjoying the show. Still more to come. See you back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for staying with us tonight. We're hoping that you're getting a lot out of tonight's show because this is a very complicated, difficult subject.
Oh, gosh.
And it's everywhere, especially with men. And then men make all kinds of promises they don't keep. And then all of a sudden there's mistrust in the relationship, and then the relationship starts to erode. And then there's tons of work that needs to be done. And you realize you can't really do any of it successfully without Christ at the center. And if you don't yield to him and make him your everything, you got problems. And Jen was just beautifully saying that, and I tried to repeat what she said, but you said it much better, Jen. So again, I find this story to be one of willingness to forgive, redemption, and you're looking at your stuff as well, aren't you, Jen? You're not just saying, Craig's the boogeyman, and boy, he did bad. You're saying I need to look at my own stuff as well. Is that fair?
Exactly. And in order to, I think, have a healthy relationship, I had to deal with my own issues of fear, like the fear of losing him or fear of not being in control. Because part of, you were talking about Craig's recovery plan or how to stop the temptation before the addiction rears its head again. Part of that for me is recognizing his triggers. And one of the things before, like I said, when we had that crisis with his health, he withdrew and didn't talk. And so during this time of healing, when getting out from under the prison of the addiction, was teaching him that I'm a safe place for him to come and share with me what he's stressed about. And so I can only be that safe place if I am working on my own junk, right, and have an intimate relationship with Jesus. So where I can say, okay, this is really freaking me out right now, Jesus, but give me the wisdom, give me discernment, help me to be there for him with your capacity and not my own.
George, there's a author from Harvard. I don't want to make it sound like I read, because I don't, but this guy named John.
Somebody told you this, whatever you're going to say.
I read this on a napkin, that there was this author who says that he can predict how relationships are going to make it within like 5 seconds. And it's not conflict that causes problems. It's the way in which conflict is brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen, you said something really strong to me, which just said, I wanted to let Craig know he had a safe place. Because who wants to step into an arena where they're going to get their head bit off?
Right.
I think that is, I don't know if that's a key to maybe some of Craig's, your extremely good fortune in this marriage, that she's willing to create a safe environment for you to share scary and dangerous things.
Yeah, I mean, it was once I realized that I could do that, it was a fundamental shift in how I viewed our relationship. And I can remember the first time that I told her, unprompted, that I had slipped and viewed pornography. And her response was one of, you know, acceptance and love. And there was no anger and there was no resentment there. And it was quite the opposite. It was like, you know, okay, so what happened and what can we do differently? And that to me was, you know, a tremendous gift because it further strengthened my resolve and gave me hope that this was good. We were going to get through this. And that's a really scary thing because to be vulnerable to someone else and tell them that you did something wrong and you know that what you did is going to impact them and they're going to respond to you negatively. And then to have them respond in the exact opposite fashion, it's an indescribable feeling.
Well, there's some progression here too. I really like the fact of the scripture verses that are coming to my head of hearing what you're quoting, you know, that it powers and principalities. It's not flesh and blood, that I need to forgive other people if I want to be forgiven too. So there's obviously, Bill, a lot of time spent in the word here. And the other thing you're going to get to as you go along the line, I had a conversation with somebody this week about the consequences that you sinned against God. That's going to be coming up here. I've sinned against my wife. I've sinned against, you know, other people, my kids, whatever. Whoa, I sinned against God here. And that kind of gets you too, that you did that and you own that, but he forgives you. And as you said, there is a way out that's going to work. This will work. There's a lot of hope here, Bill. And when we're starting, a lot of times guys will give up and go, there's no use here. But when you have Jesus, there is that hope.
I agree. Mm-hmm. One thing I heard Jen say too is if you want Craig to be honest with you, and then Craig is honest with you, the fact that you responded in a very calm manner reveals to me that you are interested in the truth. Because if he told you the truth and you were hysterical, it's like, well, maybe you don't want the truth.
Right. Well, and in that moment when he first told me, I heard God say, this is a gift. So I'm hearing Jen, you know, last time I was on a business trip, I messed up. And it was this kind of, I had to stop and take a really deep breath and be like, okay, I want to handle this with God's grace. And I just set back all of those fleshy reactions. You know, I could have been really angry. I could have been really rude with my words. But when God said, this is a gift, then I knew that if I rejected this gift, I would never get it back. And if I don't have truth in my marriage, I don't really have a marriage.
It was well said.
Really well said. Yeah. Craig, what's your response to that?
She's awesome, isn't she?
Yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for you to start singing Kumbaya or something.
No.
Well, he has a good voice.
Well, I was just kidding about that. I don't want you to sing. The ratings on this show aren't good enough anyway, so.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually taken aback by the civility, among other things, that's going on between you two. There's respect, there's love, there's grace, there's mercy, and above all, you're putting Christ at the center of this recovery. And I see it as an ultimate purpose for you to do something much greater beyond your problem, because your eyes are not on the sin but on your Savior.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, Bill, I'm often reminded of this, that God doesn't save us from our addiction without a job for us to do.
Yeah.
And I've been witness to a lot today in the forgiveness, the power of Jesus, but also the grace. I'm hearing a lot of grace here and mercy that we can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only move forward in Christ, and he has to supply that. Because on our own, we don't even want to do this.
Yeah. Well, this hour has just gone too fast, and I don't know if we even had a chance to get into all the questions I spent so much time preparing today. Boy.
No, actually, he does prepare. That wasn't a joke. He's a comedian. He's a comedian, but that part was serious.
So I guess I'll spend the last 40 seconds asking you to come back on the show and be a guest again, and we can we can pick up where we left off, because this is a big subject and we would like to talk to you some more. So I see you're nodding yes, which is perfect. So we'll leave it at that.
I'd love to be on your show again, Bill.
Your odds of being on are not good. You've listened to Real Recovery. Thanks for joining us tonight. Good night, everyone, and have a good week. God bless. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, of Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.